Welcome to the Almost Awesome Esports. I'm your host, Ben, with Tyron as my co-host tonight. How are we tonight, Tyron?
Can't complain.
Can't complain. Almost Awesome is here to bring you the trending esports news over the past week or so for those who did not have the time or simply did not know about it. Tonight's episode is introduced by Nilo Napolitician Dreams, a dubstep remix. Link will be provided in the description. With that out of the way, I'm going to kick off this week's 1 minute quickie and then Tyron into the start off the e-news. So Tyron, I'm just going to ask you a few questions. First of all, League or Dota?
Come on, that's stupid.
Okay, I know that's stupid, but it's League. Alcohol or non-alcoholic beverage? And if so, is it beer or spirits?
Oh, you're just making the assumption I'm an alcoholic now, are you?
Just because I am.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, a little from column A, a little from column B. Definitely beer when I drink alcohol, though.
You suck. Okay. Favorite gaming fuel?
Pretty much whatever I can find in the fridge. You know, you go out at 3 in the morning, you're just not picky.
Not picky, too easy. Do you prefer to play competitive or watch competitive gaming?
Well, unless you count Bronze 5 and Silver 1 in League and Counter-Strike, respectively, probably watching.
Do you play any competitive gaming yourself?
Again, unless you count Bronze 5 Get Wrecked Scrubbed as competitive, then...
Just take the as above option. Exactly. Do you have any special talents?
Unless you count Wrecking Scrubs in Bronze 5? Nope.
That is a talent for me anyway. And last question, are you currently studying? And if so, what is your course?
Nah, I'm a lazy shit. I sit at home and do nothing. Nah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Nah, I study IT and business at some university, at some place, somewhere.
Okay, so somewhat lazy, somewhat not lazy.
Pretty much.
Alrighty. Now, Tyron, if you want to kick off the e-news.
Yeah, so the first thing we've got here is Proly, the head coach from H2K, has joined them again as coach for IEM Cologne this weekend. Looper leaves Masters 3 in China and joins Royal Never Give Up. He'll join ex-Samsung White Support Mara, which should definitely be a really competitive team this year. Maren, the MVP of Worlds, leaves SKT and joins LGD Gaming. He'll join Imp and the rest of the LGD roster in what looks to be a rather powerful team. SKT signs Duke to replace him in the top lane. Ben, he's definitely got some big shoes to fill there.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Jumping into the shoes of the world's best players is one heck of a task, but something I'm sure Duke will be able to handle. He is a great top laner after all, and who was a shining light in last season's poor performing Nugent team.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure he got MVP in the regular season, even though Najin placed down the bottom somewhere.
So well,
definitely a good support. Definitely a good top laner there.
He is a shining light after all.
Lustboy, he was a support for TSM, has moved back to Korea and joined Incredible Miracle as strategic coach. Gambit has sold their LCS position to Team Vitality, which is a team a lot of FPS players will know from games such as COD and Battlefield, and they have signed ex-HTK support Kasim. Na'Vi, a team that has recently become a top-tier team in Counter-Strike, which Ben will talk about later, has announced their new League lineup, which consists of JWoww in the top lane, Aemon in the jungle, Soz PureEffect in mid lane, Xtalk and Mountain in the bot lane. And there are changes in the way the LCS will be played. So next season, essentially, the Europeans will play best of two matches, similar to what's done in China, whereas NA will do best of threes. Moving away from that sort of stuff, we can look at the All-Stars event, which happened over the last weekend. So there were six teams, six regions represented in two teams. So we had Team Fire, which had the NA LCS team, the LCK, and the LMS. And they went up against Team Ice, which consisted of the European team, the LPL, and the CIS. In the end, the tournament came down to the best of three series between the top, the most winning team in each one, which was LCK and EU. Pretty much exactly the same as what we saw at Worlds, where the LCK took home the win 2-0. But, you know, these sort of points, this was sort of just one part of the weekend, right, Ben?
Well, there was some actual great game types with the All for One, Assassin's Mode, Marksman Mode, Tandem Mode, and the 1v1 tournament. It did provide a bit of a matchup.
Yeah, the 1v1 tournament was some great fun, especially Bloody Robin. I mean, he had a 1v1 against Faker, which we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, I think, where they both ended up going Anivia. They had an Anivia mirror match, and it was just a farm fest. It was one of the most boring games, one of the most boring games on day one. We saw other games with Lex knocking out Westor and Kasim taking out Ziv. Day 2, Froggen provided us with a little bit more entertainment and played a Nasus AP into an ADC, which is something you wouldn't expect to work in a 1v1. But he ended up knocking out Koro, with Kasim knocking out Uzi, one of the favourites in the competition. Doublelift also proved that NA is greater than EU by knocking out Reckless in a Lucian Mirror. Day 3 we saw Doublelift knock out Kasim, and Afro move fall out of the competition to Froggen in probably one of the most bizarre matches I've seen quite a while. They banned out Zillion with their bans, and they both locked in Zillion and chose zero runes and masteries, and essentially had a farm fest with just the base AD and AP. In the final day, we saw Bjergsen knock out Prey in the semi-finals, and Doublelift beat Froggen in what seemed to be a never-ending series. We'll talk more about that in the Play of the Week. In the final game, we saw Doublelift take on Bjergsen, where Bjergsen ended up taking the game in a best of three. The tandem mode was also something interesting, where we saw one person controlling the mouse and one person controlling the keyboard for each champion. Without spoiling too much for those who are planning to go back and watch it, there was some pairings that actually worked really well, and some not quite so much. Ben, take it away with the rest of the news.
With the rest of the news, we've got some CSGO news this week. Big CSGO news, we've got the E-League's Road to Las Vegas qualifiers just been announced. So, with this, we have the European and also North American teams joining up. From Europe, we've got G2 Esports, Mouse Esports, Team Dignitas, SK Gaming, Flipside Tactics, Vertex Gaming. And from North America, we've got Cloud9, Team Liquid, CounterLogic Gaming, Complexity Gaming, Conquest, and Splice, which was formerly known as Follow Esports. Well, with the two close qualifier tournaments will be run from December 15 to 18, and each features six teams from each region, which we just mentioned, alongside with two top teams from each region's open qualifiers. So it's going to be pretty interesting. And on top of that, last week, we actually got a update for Counter-Strike. Funny that. The winter update just added, and it features slight adjustments to holiday cheer. Gifts are now available for purchase. Added a revolver case, which we also will mention. The new R8 revolver has been added to the game, which occupies the Desert Eagle loadout slot. So we got an option now between the Deagle or the R8 revolver. Added several new community stickers, capsules, added some service medals for 2016 as well. But now let's get back to the R8 revolver. I believe, Taran, you've had a bit of experience with it so far.
Yeah, so I played a few games with it before it got nerfed, and boy, was it OP. You could essentially, on Dust 2, so you know Dust, the Dust 2 map, right, Ben?
Yeah, for sure.
So essentially, from T-Spawn, usually you have an AWP looking down mid to see how many cross from Spawn to B, and just so you know where to take the bomb. And essentially you could one-hit someone such as like an AWP with the R8 revolver. It was just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it is renowned as a pretty much handheld AWP. There is videos on top of videos, people just 1v5-ing a team with simple maybe two shots, and you can take out five people at once. It's crazy.
Yeah. Thankfully, it's been nerfed now. Got nerfed a couple of days ago, with many petitions being out there to, you know, it's a gun. Wasn't nerfed by a certain date, then there were petitions out there to try and have organizations not allow it played in competitive. But thankfully, it got nerfed. It's still a powerful gun, but it's not anywhere near absolutely wreck everyone. Don't need any other guns anymore.
Yeah, it still is up there in the high-tier damage guns, but at the same time, they've made it more inaccurate. So it's really close quartile, so you're not going to run down long expecting to get any decent plays out of it.
Oh,
you probably
surprised.
Will get picked off. You'll be surprised at the moment, but on a competitive scene where people can actually aim an AWP, it's going to prove a challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
So back to the update. Gameplay changes have also come in. In competitive matchmaking, times are now 1 minute 55 and 40 seconds for round and C4, respectively. These are also new times for the CSGO Major Championships.
Yeah, it's something definitely interesting. It's the way they've lined up sort of competitive times as well as times within major competitions. It sort of allows for better practice by playing through the ladder, something that we haven't seen in games past, but it'll definitely sort of, it brings up the emphasis on a diffuse kit.
It truly does. Also, we have adjusted recovery time on the AK-47, the M4A4, the M4A1S assault rifles, due to reduce the range of which spraying is preferable to tap slash bursting. We've also have increased movement and accuracy on the pistols, Elites 5.7, the Glock, P2000, the P250, Tech 9 USP, and the CZ75A, which is pretty much almost all the pistols. It's just pretty much to stop pistols being a more viable option. It's really a chance play, I would say. It's still viable, but not as viable as what it used to be. And also, we've added timeouts to competitive matchmaking, which can be called with a vote. Default is 60 seconds, and there is the commands and so on for it. And also a new feature that's been added is the killer replay. To casual and demolition modes, GOTV must be activated on the server to enable the feature. It's kind of interesting how they've brought in the killer replay now. I think they're starting to follow up with other major titles, how they're bringing in the kill cam such, just to give you an idea of how you went wrong. Was it server side? Was it lag side? Was it just because you weren't prepared for it? Were you caught out? It's really a feedback option, so to speak.
I think it's more like just the COD last hit, just to show off, you know?
Yeah, it could be.
Hopefully we get something like that coming to League of Legends soon.
Looking at you, Riot. That's right, Riot. We're talking about you, Riot.
Yeah, I'm staring at you. Come at me.
Well, that's enough of Riot for tonight. Let's move on to the rest of our news. And last news for this week on the CSGO is the ESEA Pro League Season 2 Finals. But North America, dreams crushed. As the no North American teams come through to the finals, we had Fnatic versus Team Liquid with Fnatic coming out on top, Envy versus Luminosity Gaming with Envy coming out on top, Question versus Fnatic with Fnatic coming out on top, and Team Envious with Envy coming out on top of that. The finals were this morning, and it seems that Fnatic come out on top, dominating with a 3-2. I can't really vouch for the gameplay myself, but I dare say Fnatic, they're a high team. They probably did put out a very good performance.
Yeah, as I said a couple of weeks ago, it's good to see Fnatic just working their way back to the top. This side of the year, they were definitely the team to beat. There was sort of no team on their level. They were sort of on a tier of their own, sort of like the SKT in League of Legends. But then it got towards mid-year, and then there were other teams like the former TSM, Na'Vi, all this sort of stuff that were able, could even put Envious in that list, who were just sort of being able to go above this. But now it's good to see Fnatic return to form coming into next year.
Next year they will be the team to beat for sure. And with that, that is the end of the CSGO news this week. And we move on to Call of Duty. Scores from the North America and Australian qualifiers for the preseason 16. So we had the group sessions, Group A, B, from Australia with Mind Freak versus Avidity. Mind Freak coming out on top 3-0. We had Skyfire versus Citadel Gaming with Skyfire coming out on 3-0. In Group B, we had Team Immunity versus Sway Gaming, with Team Immunity coming out on a 3-0, as well as Tainted Minds versus NV, with Tainted Minds coming out on 3-1. The standing finals ended up with Skyfire in first place, followed by Mind Freak in second place. Eliminated was Avidity and Citadel Gaming. From Group B, we had Tainted Minds in first place and Team Immunity in second place. Eliminated was NV and Sway Gaming. Over in North America, we had E6 Gold versus Apethian Esports, with Apethian coming out on 3-0. We had Optic Gaming versus Orbit GG, with Optic Gaming coming out on 3-0. Optic Gaming is a high tier, so that was not really much of a surprise, as they are disputing champions at the moment. From Group B, we had Rise Nation versus 3S Up, with Rise Nation barely coming out on top on a 3-2. We had Luminosity Gaming versus Team Elevate. Team Elevate came out 3-1. In Group C, we had Team Calibre versus Dream Team, with Team Calibre coming out 3-1. And Team Envious versus Counter-Logic Gaming, with Team Envious coming 3-0. I kind of find that funny, seeing as Counter-Logic Gaming were running strong coming early year, but now they've kind of died off. And finally, to Group D, we had FaZe Clan versus Happy Hour, with FaZe Clan coming out 3-0. And Complexity Gaming versus Nation in a 3-1. So we'll go over to the final standings. From Group A, we had qualified Optic Gaming with Apathian Esports coming in second. We had from Group B, Rise Nation in first place with Team Elevate in second place. From Group C, we had Team Envious with Team Calibre in second place. Group D, no surprise with FaZe Clan coming out on first place and Complexity Gaming coming out on second. So this is the pre-16 coming into the championships, and we probably will report on more as soon as we hear from it. And now with that out of the way, we move on to our main topic of the week, which is what goes into a competition. And we'll follow up with, if Almost Awesome was to create a competition, what would it consist of? So, Tyrone, do you want to start us off with this one?
Yeah, so pretty much over the last few months, we've heard a lot of stuff about the union-like regulations coming into games like CSGO as well as Hearthstone, all that sort of stuff in regards to prize money, all that sort of stuff. And I thought something like this would be, you know, something interesting to look at. So, if you were a pro player, what would be the most important part for you, Ben? Would it be sort of the prize money? Would it be the competition? Would it be being put into a 5-star hotel? The format of the competition?
It's kind of iffy because to play on a high level sporting, we got to try and match it as if it was a real sport. Not saying that it's not a real sport, but soccer players, they're getting $20,000 a month kind of set up for high tier players. Where with gaming competitions, the salary is not exactly that. So to live off being a high-tier player, it can be a struggle. But
possibly.
I would have to say prize money would have to be one thing, but it's really the format, I find, because you can't really do something that you're not liking, can you?
Yeah, sort of. But just to go back to your money sort of argument there for a sec, you say soccer players, the top quality ones are on $20,000 a month. The ones I've seen are on sort of $20,000 a day. Which is something we, you know, we'll never see in esports. But the $20,000 a month, there's players who get more than that already. Players like, as we said before, Mara moving to LGD, he's going to get paid $850,000 for the next season, I think. So there are players on that tier. In regards to, you know, the best type of competition, though, I think really the most important parts are the format. We see in CSGO that a lot of people are really against the best of ones in the group stage. And they want to move. People want to see the competition move towards best of three, which is something, I don't know, I'm personally against because it means there's going to be a lot less of these upsets. You're not going to have, you know, these really small teams pull out weird strategies from their region and be able to take out these top tier teams. We've seen teams like Renegades from Australia take games off teams like Fnatic and the former TSM because of this one best of one format. In regards to prize money, though, what is your level of prize money? How much do you want to see a winning team take home?
That's really hard to say because there is a lot that goes into it. An ideal, depending on what type of esports, because some have competitions like fairly regularly, so where others only have a few competitions throughout the year. So it really depends where we're looking at this, because League of Legends, you've got your split seasons. There's always stuff going on. But with esports such as Capcom, there is competitions going, but it's not on a higher level compared to League of Legends, as well as there is, like, fair enough, you got your high-tier players playing throughout, but it's not a well-known, well-backed competition.
I mean, League is probably the worst example to look at because Riot actually pays players in the LCS a salary rather than the team paying them as well. They both pay, so it's probably the worst thing to look at. In regards to League, I think the best way to look at it would be the challenger teams. They sort of have no support from Riot, and there needs to be something going on there. There needs to be some more sort of tournaments there to be able to pump that up. Whereas things like CSGO, I think in a major tournament, the prize money is $250,000, I'm pretty sure. That's sort of the level, the overall prize money for the tournament for a major competition. In comparison, we have things like Dota 2, where we saw at the international, the winning team, you know, each player became a millionaire because of it. So do you think there needs to be a middle ground?
There definitely has to be a middle ground because there is a lot that goes in, even in community events, there is a lot that goes into it. And especially if teams, master tier teams on League of Legends, like, they're their own formed team. There's no real backing to it. There's no real sponsors to them. They literally have to win that to make a benefit out of it, where teams such as TSM that going into even the summer splits, regardless if they win or lose, they're always going to get a backing from sponsors, from their founders of the team and such as that. And I find that's a real bit disappointing. I mean, just being not part of a team can be a problem, if you get what I mean, where I'm coming with this.
Yeah, sort of. I don't know. I think Hi-Rez with Smite has it probably spot on the nail. They've sort of taken... They have a crowdfunding thing with their prize money for the world tournament coming up in January, I think. But the maximum prize money was set at $1 million for the team. And then any other crowdfunding that was put into it is going to be invested into other smaller tournaments. So that way that, you know, it's not just one lump tournament at the end of the year, sort of like League is. It's a set, it's sort of moving towards the way Counter-Strike is played, where you have a bunch of minor tournaments that allow teams to earn some sort of income through the year.
And it's not like one winner takes all kind of thing. It really gives more opportunity to other teams and players.
Yeah, definitely. But something else I think they all really need to look at is bringing in other regions that aren't the major regions into these games. So we see Counter-Strike's doing really well with this. We've seen quite a few Australian teams make their way onto the international stage in the last year and a half, 2 years or so. We've got, you know, Renegades and Immunity, and then we've just seen Legacy play their first game on international. We see teams from sort of South America, with Luminosity Gaming being one of the top 10 teams in the world. Whereas games like League, you know, you have these wildcard tournaments, but only one team from one of these smaller regions actually gets to play in these high-quality world tournaments, which is something that disappoints me greatly.
But the good thing about it is they're really starting to crack down on the balancing now. We're not having just like full teams from North America full with European players and so on. There is a real cap to it now that stops all these high-quality players spreading out everywhere, and it's really giving everyone else a shot at the gold.
Yeah, right. It does have that limit in there saying that, you know, you can have two players who are not from your region, but at least three of them have to be, which is, again, something I don't really like, especially because you can't have teams like, say, the best team in North America at the moment, CLG. They can't move over to somewhere else to play against higher quality teams, so they can't actually move themselves over to China or Korea and play a split in the LPL or the LCK because of this rule. So something that we don't see in other sort of esports like Counter-Strike, because, you know, we saw with the Renegades, they left Australia and went from being Vox Eminor to becoming Renegades, and they've pretty much moved their entire team over to the US so that they can, you know, develop
a
better team. Well, at the moment, I think they're somewhere around the top 20. That's something, hopefully by the end of next year, I'm hoping we see them up towards the top 10. It's unlikely at this stage, but it's something I'd really like to see.
Well, top 20, that's really actually an achievement when you think about it, because there is a lot of teams out there that don't even really get their name in the light.
Oh, for sure. But just quickly, if we look back on the major topic quickly, do you think the quality of competition is something important to a tournament?
Well, of course, because we don't want to just throw out tournaments and not really give two shits about them, like just throw them out like they're nothing special. Tournament is really the best of the best going up against each other. And whether that be from high tiers, from middle tiers, or even lower tiers, anything from professional to even community-based competitions, there really needs to be quality into it, because with competitions, it's really about the game itself, isn't it? We want to show off skills. We don't just want to be like, here's a team, here's another team, just big deathmatch.
Yeah, I sort of get what you're saying, but you're sort of talking more on the side of viewers, people who are actually watching it. We want to see the best teams go up against each other. In regards to the players, do you think they want to be playing against crappy quality players where they can just win, take home a check and go home? Or do you think they want to be challenged and sort of push themselves to do better?
Well, the whole point of gaming to start with was entertainment. Now, if you were to treat it like a business, then definitely that's not the way to go. A game is a game, whether we make it competitive or even if it's just for casual. At the end of the day, it's for fun. Now, if you have to challenge yourself for fun, then that's definitely the way to go for it. But if you're looking at it as a paycheck, then no, that's not exactly how it's meant to be played. As much as a paycheck's nice, competitive is more the way to go. And that's where I see it should be fairly balanced. We shouldn't just see high tier teams take on lower tier teams and just be a complete bloodfest.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you there, but not really on the fun first sort of thing, but that's something I'll leave for another day. Anyway, with that, I think we'll move into the play of the week. So this week, as we were talking about before, we had the 1v1 tournament, and Froggen in a game with Double Lift. It was bloody terrible. Have you seen this at all, Ben?
No, I haven't yet. I've yet to watch it, but I've heard some really funny things come out of this.
Yeah, definitely. So the first game was, you know, normal. It was just a typical game. Double Lift ended up winning by 100 farm, something he felt really, really dirty about. You know, he's one of these really aggressive players, wants to kill everything possible. And then we saw the second game. We saw a Twitch versus Olaf. Olaf took Snowball. Snowball hit Double Lift as he's recalling. Olaf follows Snowball onto Fountain, kills himself. They both agree to a redo. The game starts again. They both play Twitch and Olaf. Same thing happens a second time. Finally, we see a game with no snowballs and Double Lift gets to 99 CS, and then rather than, you know, killing one final CS to take the game, he goes for the kill, and thankfully gets it. Moves on to the finals, which we spoke about before. That set of 1v1s, man, that's got to be the play of the week.
It definitely does. And with the play of the week out of the way, we're now going to leave you with this week's interview. Once again, Tyrone has got the pleasure of interviewing a special someone, and this week's episode we have Danny Rennie, a caster for games such as StarCraft II, Rocket League, and more. We'll now leave you to the interview, and we'll be back soon.
How are you, Danny?
I'm doing just wonderful.
So just tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement in esports.
Yeah, so to start off, I mean, I took kind of a non-traditional route. So when I was in college, I originally wanted to make movies and things, and I had, you know, big dreams like many people did. But part of that was we had a sports broadcast on the campus, and I became very involved in that. I was running it kind of my freshman, sophomore year, so I was doing everything from camera work, everything you'd see on a typical sports broadcast. And eventually, I kind of got the itch that maybe I wanted to do the commentating side. I thought it was pretty cool, and I thought it was something that I could do, because half the time I would be sitting there, and the commentators would go blank, and then I'd be feeding them questions just to kind of keep conversation going. And I was like, you know, I think I can just do this on my own. So eventually, I was able to do that, and I got to commentate for about 2 years there. And then it probably wasn't until about, you know, 6 months later, I had always been a huge fan of, like, StarCraft specifically, and they always had great casters, so I was always watching in Korea and things like that, you know, the Code-S stuff, if you're familiar with it, and it just got to a point where I was like, you know, maybe I can do this on, you know, video games, which I love probably more than regular sports, so I got a couple gigs. I think I started on Reddit. There was a subreddit for a little while called Cast It, and it was basically for mostly for StarCraft 2 people who just wanted their games casted randomly. So I started there, and eventually I kind of got picked up by an esports company called Thunderdog Esports, which unfortunately is out of business now, but it was wonderful with the time I was with them. So I was doing StarCraft and Smite just a little bit. Mostly StarCraft though, and then since then I've kind of done a little bit of Rocket League, and I've done a couple side gigs here and there. So mostly I've been all on the kind of production and running of the league side, more so than ever actually having the skill to play.
Yeah, definitely. I honestly wish I had the skill to play, but you know, I don't have the time.
Yeah, don't we all?
I don't have the time to train 17 hours a day.
Yeah.
So you were talking about casting StarCraft. Was that the original, like StarCraft 1 and Brood War, or was that the newer one, StarCraft 2?
I should probably give you some time range would help. Yeah, this was StarCraft 2, and specifically kind of Heart of the Swarm. I might have started just barely at the end of Wings of Liberty, but Heart of the Swarm. So this would have been probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And yeah, I just kind of, they started with some small tournaments and things, so I was very amateur level at that point. I had a couple gigs where I got to go higher than that, but that's primarily where I kind of got my bearings.
Okay, sweet. You said the organization you were working for closed down. Where do you see yourself going now? Do you see yourself doing the same thing in the future or moving away from esports in general?
It's kind of tough to tell. So one of the most difficult things I think about esports today is that the amateur slash anything that's not the top level is really, really difficult to get into. It's very underdeveloped. There's not a lot of organization. So it's kind of like, unless you're in the top, you know, 10, 15, maybe, and sometimes not even that high, of players or teams, you know, you're barely even recognized and you can't even do it as a career. And that's on the player side. Now, talking about the caster side, I mean, you have to be in the top three, you know, if you're ever going to, you know, make a living doing it. But for me, I'm not sure. It's something I kind of enjoy. I do it for fun. I usually don't get paid very rarely unless it's going to be a significant amount of my time. I just offer to do it for free because I just enjoy it and it's a lot of fun. So I'm still doing a couple things here and there, but who knows, you know? I'm getting married in April, so maybe that'll change some things up. And if I start, you know, kids or anything else, if it's not a career by that point, I'm not sure I'll have the time, but yeah. We're going to try to continue it for as long as we can.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So based on that, I assume you sort of don't see esports commentary or commentary in general as something that, you know, is an easy career to pursue.
Yeah, it's extremely difficult. And it's like this in regular sports or not. I mean, I do regular sports on the side, too. I mean, I just had a radio gig here in town where I did a local basketball team. But things like that. Again, you know, you just kind of ask your general person, even, you know, as big as the NFL is, if you could say, name me five commentators in the U.S., you know, for our American football, and maybe they can name you five. You say, all right, name the top 10, and most people can't even go that far. And you can pretty much extend that to almost any sport or esport around the league. Very few people could name you five StarCraft commentators. I maybe could, and I was in there for a little bit, you know, trying to make my footprint known. But it's just really, really hard because it's such a tiny, tiny percentage of people who ever get to that level. And even for them, it's not like it's some amazing, glamorous career, you know. It's a lot of work. So for me personally, I don't see it. And for a lot of people, you know, it's one of those. It's so difficult to get there. I mean, it's kind of like your dreams of being, you know, a rock star or anything else. It's really difficult to get noticed, and you got to be in that very, very top 1% if you ever want to try to make it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people see, I guess, all this sort of stuff is once you get there, it's the best thing in the world. But no one understands the amount of work that has to be put in to actually get there and then to stay on top.
Oh, absolutely.
So with that, would you have any tips to give to someone who wanted to pursue this sort of thing?
Maybe this is a bit pessimistic, but I mean, going with a little bit of a backup plan, you know, you got to appreciate passion and whatnot, but it's just like anything else, you know, when I was looking to be, you know, a movie producer, which is, you know, unbelievably, you know, aiming super high, you always kind of have to have a backup plan because you want to put everything in, but you don't want to be completely hosed if things don't work out. You never want to be put in that, you know, financial or even just kind of life situation. But if you're going to, you know, it's all about trying to do the best every time, because when you're starting, I used to get really hung up on, you know, the amount of viewers that we would have, and we would be doing tournaments. You know, there was one day I think I casted for 13 hours or so. It was on and off, so it wasn't straight through. We had a couple, you know, hour long breaks in there. But, you know, looking at the viewer count and you see 15 people and you're like, well, man, is this really worth it? I'm not getting paid. It's 13 hours and there's only 15 people listening, but you can't drop your game just because of that. I mean, you have to constantly be trying to get better and better and better every single broadcast, and you kind of have to separate yourself from thinking, you know, this is going to be determined by the number of viewers I have. And if I get a lot, then, you know, I'll really try hard and I'll try to be my best. But if there's not that many viewers, I don't care. You can't really have that mentality. You've got to give your best product every single time, because that's the only way you're going to get better. And there's other people who are doing that. So if you're not, you're just going to be falling behind them time and time again. So it's tough and it's a grind, but you really, the motivation really has to come internally, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the same with these sort of things, like podcasts like this. You see sort of, you look at it when you start out and you have, you know, very few viewers and it makes you feel sort of, you know, why should I put in such a high effort if there's not a viewership there?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, I even delved in. I do a little stand-up comedy on the side. I start a little comedy podcast here and there, and I was really excited the first time I had like 20 people download. I thought that was way higher than I ever thought. But and you never know what happens. I was on Reddit on my main username. I had a video completely random that I made, and it hit the front page, and I got like 250,000 views in a couple of days. Just completely out of nowhere, and that's, I feel like, how a lot of people end up getting discovered for esports commentating and things. You know, if you happen to have a great call at the right moment, things can really align for you. And that kind of goes back to what I said, is you got to be on all the time.
Yeah, definitely. But if we move off that a little bit, something we were speaking about off air a little bit was the comparison between esports and real sports, as people like to call it.
Yes, yes. The doomed comparison that nobody likes to make. Yes. You'll get people really angry talking about that.
Oh, definitely. Do you have any views on this? Do you classify esport as an actual sport, or is it sort of something completely different in your eyes?
Yeah, it's a little bit weird because I think of it as a sport, but not like in the traditional sense, you know. I also consider things like chess a sport. It absolutely is, because a sport to me is something that brings a lot of competition, and that you can only, you know, there's a limit. There's the highest competition is unbelievably difficult to get to. And I think that's where the disconnect really comes from people, because when you're talking to them about, you know, esports or something, you know, when I first got into it, I had family members ask, because I would have an occasional gig or something and I'd have to leave, say, a family function a little early in order to make it. But they'd be like, oh, really? So you just sit and talk about people playing video games? I'm like, yeah, turn on any sport, you know, soccer, football, whatever you want, and you're going to see two people in a booth just talking about the game. It's the same thing. And people are like, oh, so they, you know, they play for money? Yeah. What is this? So they just sit around and play video games all day. I'm like, yeah, that's just like saying a track star just goes out and runs fast. Like, it completely cheapens what kind of effort is really required to be at that level, and you're kind of downplaying that it's a professional thing. I mean, you can't get to any kind of money-making opportunity in any video game without being at the unbelievably top tier. It's not even the 1%. I mean, it's basically kind of like, you know, the NFL and those things. You need to be in that top, you know, 0.01%. to have a chance, and if you're outside the top 20, then you're basically irrelevant. So getting that mindset kind of flipped around for people, that it's the same thing, it requires the same dedication, not everyone can do it, it's not just something that you sit down and do so many times, you have to legitimately practice. You know, just like, say, you know, basketball teams, they have to go to the gym and shoot over and over and over and practice the same shots over and over and over. The same techniques apply. It may be something a little bit different, but you got to have that twitch reflex. Now, in terms, I think where people get really hung up is it, you know, it's not a physical thing. And I mean, obviously you have to, you know, in the case of StarCraft, you're doing, you know, 400 APM actions per minute. So you're flying around and there's a lot of, you know, mouse movement is very technical. But all those things, sure, there are certain requirements, but I think most importantly is the mental side of it, is that the amount of things running through players' heads. I mean, if you ever talk to a pro player and have them watch something on like 1/4 the speed that it occurs at, and they just talk through what they're thinking about, they can barely keep up when the gameplay is at 1/4 the speed, because there's so many tiny micro decisions that they make throughout the whole thing, and that's what makes them great players. And you see the same thing in, you know, real life, regular sports.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of put it on the same sort of level as things like motorsports. You know, they're all sports per mm-hmm. se. They all have that sports end part on it. But they're not actual sports. Like, motorsports, to me, is probably the best comparison, although I've been told otherwise. You know, you sit there for 12 hours straight. Rather than a mouse and keyboard, you have, you know, your stick and the wheel as your two controllers. With, rather than a monitor, you have a window.
Yeah, I really like that, actually. I mean, we have NASCAR here in the States, and that's, I think, kind of a lesser form. I know over in Europe, you know, they have the Formula One stuff, and that's a whole new level of, you know, precision and things. But even talking about, say, NASCAR, you know, people talk about, oh, these guys have to be in great physical condition because, you know, the heat in the car gets to be there. They get dehydrated. All that stuff, it's just very, very specific. It doesn't apply to anything else.
Yeah.
You know, outside of sitting in that car. But yeah, you make a great point. Those are the little things, like people with small wrist injuries in esports, that can be devastating because they can't perform at the highest level, even though they have the smallest, seemingly smallest injury.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a very, very unique skill set.
Yeah, that was something we saw recently in, I think it was League of Legends, with one of the major players having to, you know, completely pretty much give up his entire career or move to another position because of a really minor wrist injury.
Yeah, some guys get that nerve damage, yeah, and things, and, you know, any of those repetitive stress injuries, you know, carpal tunnel is the one that everyone knows, but all those little things. Yeah, I remember players in StarCraft all the time, people would have those little tiny things, and people just don't think that it's a big deal. It's like, oh, so your wrist just hurts a little bit? And you're like, no, you don't realize the amount of output that goes through those, you know, five tendons for their fingers. It's incredible. And being a half quarter second late on things can completely lose your entire edge. That's, you know, the margin of error at that level is so fine.
Yeah, especially in StarCraft where, you know, you're making, four, as you said, 400 APM. It's just, you know, one small misclick can pretty much cost you the game sometimes.
Yeah, and that's when you get to the highest level, you know, build orders and things. If you are not within, I would even say, you know, a half second of certain things, because these things are so refined, you know, getting into a little bit of StarCraft. So if you're not a StarCraft player, this may be a little foreign to you, but, you know, it's like if the other person, something simple, like if they're doing a Roach or Zergling all in or something, and they're going to put all their chips on the table and rush you with it, and you have a build that you know can defend that, but if you don't get a building down exactly at the right time, all of a sudden they sweep in and you lose the entire game. I mean, StarCraft, you want to talk about, you know, small decisions, just, you know, one unit not in the right position just loses you the game almost instantly. It is by far, I think, the most brutal game that I have seen for making tiny little mistakes that completely blow your chances of winning.
Yeah, and that's why I'm terrible at the game, like most people.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's one where you want to talk about barrier to entry. That is unbelievably high. And I mean, I even used to be like high diamond, almost Masters League, never quite made it in 1v1. And I play now and I'm in like Silver League just because I haven't played. You know, I possess all the mechanics. I know how the game works. But if you're just not constantly at it, you're relegated pretty low. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an argument that it's not going to end anytime soon. But, I think with that, we'll move on to the final segment of this interview here. I've got a set of questions here just to find out a little bit more about you outside of esports.
All right. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. So do you prefer consoles or PCs?
I'm big on PCs, but I'm not one to crap all over consoles. I totally get it because consoles are like automatic. I mean, it's just like you put a game in and it works, and usually, except when the producers mess up and the developers, it runs beautifully. PC, you have to tinker a lot. I enjoy it. That's why I have a PC, but I prefer PC basically, but you know, console's not all bad.
Looking at the console specifically, PlayStation or Xbox?
Oh, that's such a tough one, because I used to be Xbox. I had an Xbox and I had an Xbox 360, but I originally had a PlayStation, and I've since acquired a PlayStation 2 because Final Fantasy Forever was on the PlayStation, which is my favorite series of all time. And I played all the ones like through PlayStation, and then finally like 13 came over, which was kind of its own kind of game. So like right now, if I was going to buy one, I think it's tough. I think I might actually switch back over to PlayStation. and abandon all of the rest, which hurts me to say, but I think that's the way I'd have to go if I had to make a decision today.
Of course, there is the third console developer, Nintendo. What do you think, either Mario or Luigi? Which one do you prefer?
Being the youngest of four brothers total, I am eternally Luigi, so I totally identify with him. Mario gets all the glory, all the glam, but Luigi, the player too, he's the real hero.
Yippee!
There you go.
moving off the either-or questions for a second, what do you think your favorite video game ever? Do you have one, or...?
You know, it's tough, but I can't think kind of my default answer has to be Final Fantasy VII, and they released, like, the tech demo of the new remake version, and, like, I don't know, the, like, strongest wave of nostalgia was washing over me. Like, I went back, I've tried to play some of, like, the modded versions for PC, and I remember one, all they did was, like, upgrade the sound from, like, the original crappy PlayStation sound to, like, the full orchestral versions of everything, and, like, it was almost enough to, like, move me to tears just with, like, the nostalgia of everything and just how, like, grand it all was, because it's kind of like that's how I always heard it, but now that it actually had that true depth to it, you could kind of really hear what they were going for, and so it was pretty wonderful. So I'll have to pick Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. Just on that quickly, what do you think about Square Enix actually saying that, you know, the remake of Final Fantasy VII will probably be episodic?
Wait, what now? Was this something recent?
Yeah, a couple of days ago at, I think it was PSX, it was said somewhere, someone asked them about it, and they said it might be coming out sort of episodically.
You know what? I'll take it however I can get it, to be totally honest. I mean, I hope they don't totally blow it. I mean, in the new screenplay, they're getting away kind of from the turn-based. I don't know if they're not doing turn-based or if they're doing more of the Final Fantasy 13 where it's like pseudo-real-time. It looked like it was closer to that. I'm not sure. I'm kind of reserving judgment, and I think I'm break away from most people when I say I'm okay with them taking some creative liberties because things won't translate the same. Like some of the voice acting and text, it just won't go one-to-one. So we'll see how it works out. I'm sure they'll hit the major points, but I'm all right if they mess with a couple little things here and there like that.
Yeah. And finally, with all your time casting games, do you have a favorite professional player that you still follow or...?
It comes and goes in waves depending on, you know, the game. Back in the StarCraft days, I remember watching Parting versus MC, and they were in, a best of three, and Parting came out and there was two Protoss players, and he did a cannon rush, which is like the cheesiest, kind of quote, cheapest strategy. I mean, it's something you see people do in like Silver League, but he did it so unbelievably perfectly on the certain map, and he got MC, who was like the reigning champion. I think he's the highest paid StarCraft 2 player ever, and so Parting became my favorite from that moment. And now recently I've kind of moved into Hearthstone a little bit, so Firebat, because he's up in Canada I love, he's been trying to make Milrogue work. Sorry, geeking out a little bit into the technicalities of the games here, but it's a deck that no one uses, and I love watching him try to make it work, and he's won a couple things here and there. So those two, and Firebat probably most recently.
Yeah, that's cool. It's definitely good to see the Milrogue trying to make a comeback, especially with some of the new cards, the League of Explorers, Double Battle
Cards. Yeah. Yes. Oh man, I had lethal the other day because I think I made somebody draw 12 or 16 cards in one turn.
Wow.
That's yeah, lethal. It was. Oh yeah, it was good. I had everything lined up, and then it just rained cards, and it was wonderful. Because it's, I think if you get them to 7, then that's 30 health worth. You might need to get to 8, but I know it's 7 or 8, so that's all it takes.
Yeah, that's painful. That's such a terrible way to lose.
Oh, it's wonderful, though. It makes me feel so happy when it works.
Oh, for sure. When you're playing it, it's great. It's like the new gun in Counter-Strike. When you're playing it, it's great. When you get killed by it, it feels cheap.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, that about wraps us up. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to follow you up?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at TD. That used to stand for Thunderdogs, but TD, the Dannysaur. THEDANNY. SAUR, or on Reddit, I'm the Dannysaur. You can send me a message there as well, or the Dannysaur at Gmail. I kind of did the full social media sweep when I was setting everything up, so any of those three.
Beautiful. Anyway, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll speak to you soon.
You bet. Have a good one.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Almost Awesome Esports. I'd like to thank Danny, who gave up some of his precious time to talk to us this week. Tyron, where can we find you outside of this podcast?
So I'm on Twitter at TyronOwens108, on Steam at Mr. Inconsistent, on League at Taboo108, that's on the OC servers, and you can join our Facebook group at Almost Awesome Esports. What about you, Ben?
You can find me on Twitter at Synchro_, and also on League at White Ravenix on the OCE servers. We probably will leave these details down in the podcast description just so you can try and make out what we're actually saying. And now we leave you to the outro, and as always, stay awesome.
You go, I'll be okay. I can dream the rest away. It's just a little touch of fate, it'll be okay. It sure takes its precious time, but it's got rights, and so have I.